2, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. He's Big Joe. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, along for the ride as well. We say hello to one of our favorites, Coach Jeff Fisher, longtime Titans coach, Rams as well. Coach, how the heck are you?
I'm doing good, guys. I missed you guys. You guys get in the middle of football season and completely forget about me. Dang.
Well, now you've been busy. I know you've been fishing and also doing a lot with AF1, which we'll get to as well. So, you know, we're all busy, but we're glad we are able to catch up with you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I've missed you guys. Where are we going to start here? How's it going?
We're going to start with a freshman, Jeff Fisher, walking on the campus of Southern Cal. In his first football meeting with the legendary coach, the late John Robinson, who just passed away, I know he was a huge influence to you in your career, and we were obviously sad to learn the news. But what was that day like, walking into your first meeting as a freshman? I don't know if you had the mustache yet, but I'm sure it was something meeting with Coach for the first time.
Well, let me tell you something. First off, thanks for the opportunity. Just a great man, great father, coach. Just he was that guy that you looked up to. You know, let me go to the meeting, okay? So I don't know where I'm at on campus. I don't know where the facility is, where Heritage Hall is. I've stepped on there, scared to death. All the players reported the night before. And so I have to get up really early because you're the freshman. So you're the first ones out of the block. So it's like a 5:30 a.m. wake up, go over and get your physical and then come back. So I got that done. Well, I had a couple hours to kill. So I decided I was going to just kind of doze off a little bit, set the alarm. Alarm went off and it was dead silence. And I went, oh my gosh, my heart dropped. And it was the whole dorm was quiet. And I went down the elevator, running out the front door. And the meeting started at 8, and it was 8:15. They had turned the power off in the dorm. The players had shut the power off. They had a big old party that night when they came back to work for camp. And now I don't know where I'm going, and I'm running across this field looking for something. This guy comes running next to me, and he goes, "You're late." And I go, "I don't know where I'm going, and who are you?" He goes, "I'm late too, but you are going to get your rear end ripped when you walk in this meeting." So I follow him and run, and then we go into a building and open this door. He kicks the door open, this other player, and marches right down the steps in this auditorium where Coach Robinson is standing at the bottom, and he's addressing the team. And this player walks all the way down the steps to the front row, kicks somebody out of his seat, sits down, and everybody's now looking at me, and I'm standing in the back. And I don't know where to sit. I don't know what to do. But all I know is I'm 15 minutes late from my first team meeting. The player that joined me was Clay Matthews. He was running the show around there. He was a junior. And so he kicked somebody out of his seat. I'm standing there looking, and Coach is looking at me and another coach that happened to be North Turner. He was his first year. Coach Robinson had hired him out of University of Oregon to coach the DBs. Norv looks at me, shakes his head, and points to the ground like, "Sit, like a dog, sit." And so I sat down there. And now, so, I mean, obviously, it was a great impression, my first impression. I don't think Coach Robinson knew who I was. I certainly knew who he was. And, of course, I stood outside the room when the meeting was over, and he looked at me, and he introduced himself, and I introduced myself. He goes, "That's never happened again." I go, "No, sir." So that was how we met. And then, you know what, it progressed from there. I mean, for what he did, that was 76. So, you know, you've got, I mean, to date everybody, but you got Vince Evans and Ricky Bell. And, you know, I was part of a freshman class with Charles White. And, you know, the next year Marcus Allen comes in. And, you know, finally when I left, you know, there were, I mean, two Heisman trophies, a national championship, co-national champions with Bear Bryant, Alabama in 78. And, you know, I mean, he was one of my favorite all-time people, you know, through college. And then to think that I got a chance to play against him when he was the head coach of the Rams, I was playing for the Bears. And, you know, oh, beat. I had an interception against them. And then fast forward, 91, I got joined him. He hired me as his defensive coordinator. He was on his second stint with the Rams. And so I go from, you know, being late to his team meeting and a nobody to now I'm his defensive coordinator. You know, as time passed, we move on. I got to, compete against him, and we got to be really good friends. And he just was one of those guys. He cared about everybody. He could stand up spontaneously in front of a group and speak for hours and just kept everybody captivating. And, you know, I say this oftentimes, you know, you go, I'm very blessed to have the career that I did. And, the twists and turns and, you know, where you go and a little bit of fate and a little bit of luck. But when people ask you, you know, who were the most influential people, you know, as you grew as a coach, I would say John Robinson, because I got to play for him. I think anybody that steps on a college campus that gets to play for a coach is going to say that guy was really influential in their life. And then on the other hand, I would say Buddy Ryan, because John Robinson, you learned how to do things, and Buddy Ryan, I learned how not to do things. And so it was kind of a cool balance. But it was really, I was heartbroken when I found out. I've spoken indirectly, to the family and to friends. And coach's wishes were that we have a celebration of life after the college football season. How about that? So everybody's going to get together, and I'm sure it'll be a great reunion. You know, when you talk about, you know, the 24, 25 first-rounders he had and all those offensive linemen and the Heisman Trophy and just all the lives he touched, man, it was really a special experience for me. So thanks for the opportunity.
Jeff, what do you think it meant to John Robinson that from 2019 to 21, he was part of Ed Orgeron's staff at LSU? What did it mean to him, do you think, to still be around football that way?
Well, I knew what happened. There was, he had been doing some media stuff and some games and some color stuff, and something went sideways in Southern California with, the gig that he had going out there. And, you know, he loved Ed. Ed was his D-line coach. And then, you know, Ed got obviously hired out of there, I believe, to LSU. And so he just loved the game. He wanted to stay around people that he enjoyed. His wife actually was from Baton Rouge. And so he wasn't, you know, he had said at the time, he goes, choosing between Southern California and Baton Rouge, you know, I might kind of maybe lean towards Southern California, but, you know, he loved his wife and he decided to go down there and he made the most of it, you know, assisting Ed. And, and obviously Ed had that good run and then they had their difficulties. And so coach ended up staying down there.
How was it when you faced him, coach, in the 85? Was it the NFC Championship game? You were with the Bears. He's a head coach of the Rams. It didn't go well for the Rams that day, but that was pretty close for him to get into the Super Bowl. But you had to kind of feel for him on that day, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of our attention was on Eric Dickerson. We had to do what we needed to do to get, corral ED, and we did. And I mean, I think the writing was on the wall there. I mean, everybody knew once we got past that one, then, it was pretty much over. So, there was, I think it was 83. We went out there and played. Ferragamo was the quarterback. And I kind of was laying in the weeds and had an idea where I was going to go with the ball, jumped up and snatched it. And, you know, that was might have been my only career interception. But it was fun taking place against the Rams. But coach was really good. I mean, I'll tell you one more quick story. When I, went out and we were in the process of relocating again. So that would have been 6:15 or 6:16. Coach wanted to come out to an OTA and because he loved football. And he came out for the first time. And, you know, he was in the O-line room and in the running back coach's room and just watching and fascinated with what we were doing in the run game. But I think the most important thing that I take away from that was I was standing in front of my team and he was in the back row sitting there listening to me address the team, and I was goofing around with some of the players that, you know, I think I, you know, was toying around with a couple guys that had done something they shouldn't have done, and, you know, just kind of, you know, it's awfully disappointing. But look there, looking back across that room and seeing him there with that smile on his face, it was, you know, it was a full circle. You know, here's that kid that came in there, mustache or not. I'm not going to ever admit to whether I had one or not in 76, but I did make the full circle with him, you know, and it was just a great memory. And, you know, those things that we as coaches that have fortunate to have those long careers get to reflect back on in those special moments. But definitely going to miss that man. He did a lot for college football.
Jeff Fisher is with us, and Jeff, you know, to kind of pick your brain on some other things, we've talked a lot with the Titans and their offensive line this year, and we actually had a texter come in to the show and say, you know, I don't understand why they can't figure this out. Jeff Fisher had it figured out for years with, you know, a guy would leave and they'd put another guy in. What was it that made it, you know, so successful for you guys, for you and Floyd and Munch to have those offensive lines that, you know, if a John Runyon left, you had the next guy ready. It felt like for years, you guys just, that was the almost the best part of the team.
Well, it was, and so much credit goes to Munch and to Floyd as well. But, you know, we were, you know, you have to stay ahead, and that's what we tried to do. And as, you know, as I mean, one of the best offensive linemen to ever play the game, Brad Hopkins, as he was getting older, you knew that it would be eventually you're going to have to replace him. So how are you going to go about doing that? And so it just seemed like every year, you know, from guys from like Kevin, you know, Kevin Long to Mike Roos to Dave Stewart to Zach Tiller, and just all, we were constantly just rebuilding and put ourselves in position to replace. And on top of that, Munch was such an outstanding teacher, and he was just relentless at developing players that we were able to do that. And so, and it all, I mean, based on the way, you know, that we were wired and what we're about, we're going to run the football and we're going to protect the quarterback. And, you know, we just felt like we had to build our teams, you know, up front, inside out. And that's what we did year after year. And I have to give, you know, Munch and Floyd credit for that. Now, I mean, I, you know, obviously we made good decisions. I mean, Mike Roos and, you know, Dave Stewart. Dave Stewart wouldn't say a word. Mike Roos could run for governor, you know. But both those guys understood when they put their hand down what we wanted to do, and that was dominate an opponent.
Jeff, 1995, your first full season as a head coach. You know, Brian Callahan, his first full season right now. A lot of things going on. What was the biggest thing you got to understand halfway through the season in 95 as a head coach that you had no idea a head coach had to deal with when you were an assistant coach? Is there one thing that stood out to you?
Well, it's a great question. I got a head start, you know, ahead of Brian, because, you know, I was an interim head coach. I was in the program in 94. I was the defensive coordinator, and we were in a huge state of transition. You know, that was the first year of the salary cap in 94. And so when I stepped on into the facility, you know, I thought Warren Moon and everybody else was going to be part of the roster, and they weren't, because, you know, Bud was, you know, millions of dollars over the cap prior to, you know, the year, you know, to 95, where, or 94 rather, where the cap went into effect. So we had a lot of stuff going on. On top of that, you know, we were converting from a, you know, we didn't have a tight end on the roster. We didn't have a tight end within miles of the facility. You know, there was a run and it was a run and shoot team. So, you know, it was four wide receivers. And so I changed from, you know, in midstream during the season, you know, when we went to, you know, I went from playing four receivers every snap to two receivers, and then maybe going to three on third down. But, you know, so there was a lot going on. There were receivers that weren't happy about that. We, you know, we just, we took over a team that was, you know, obviously 2-14 for a reason. And so 95 being the first year, you know, that, I mean, we stepped right into the move relocation rumors. And so, you know, there was a lot of distractions and things like that. But, you know, I think there's some parallels. I mean, Floyd and I, we got together early. 94, I worked with him. 95, was our first year together. And, you know, now you've got, you know, Coach Callahan and Rand kind of working together. I mean, they're timing wise about the same. Rand had a couple years, or a year rather. So, you know, they'll work together and they'll put it together. I kind of see similarities in that, there's a line coach that's coaching for the Titans right now that is pretty dang good, you know, and he knows what he's done. He's done it his whole life, and we had much. And so, you know, it starts there. So I just think, you know, it's hard to talk about being patient, but when this group's playing together, whether it's one play or 60 plays or four or five games together, every single rep they get is a rep you can build on for the future. Because, you know, people once said a difference between an average player and a good player is about 1,000 snaps. And these guys just need work, and they need snaps and need experience. And so, I think as you look at the Titans right now, there's a lot of areas where people can point to, one being the quarterback position, two being the O-line, three being injuries here and there and the stuff going on in special teams. But this group is growing. They're growing pains. They're learning from it, and they're going to put a lot of these mistakes that are happening on a weekly basis behind them as they continue to mature.
Jeff Fisher is with us. And I wanted to bring up Arena Football 1 because obviously you have been very, very involved with the Arena League. The AFL is no more. It is now AF1, and I know it's based here. But tell us a little bit about this transition and how excited you are to look forward to the 2025 season.
Well, I appreciate that opportunity. Yeah, it was a hard road to finish last year, as we did. But we did get, you know, into a championship game. Billings won the championship. We got it televised. We had network partners, and basically it ended up being eight teams that found a way to finish. A couple were on respirators, but we got it done, and we got it done under a 30-day license agreement with the AFL. So we spun off. We got the rights to AF1, which is the original. That's where it all started. And so we currently, we have new teams. We got a lot of exciting things to announce over the next couple of weeks, I believe. We'll have a specific number. It's fluctuating right now. We got a couple of teams that are, you know, desperately trying to meet the requirements, to get into the league. And so, we'll have it, you know, we're going to have more teams that we finished with last year. We got a lot of exciting stuff going on, and it's all coming. I mean, I hate to tip the hat too soon and, you know, say so-and-so is going to be part of our league when it's not finalized yet. So we got a lot of things working, and over the next couple, we will have a team here in Nashville, and of course, and, you know, we're just kind of putting everything together right now. So we're a couple weeks away, and the timing is ours. We're in control of it, and we got a lot of good quality people working for us at the league office level. We've had, you know, meetings here, meetings in Chicago, and so a lot of good stuff going on. So stay tuned.
Jeff Fisher is with us. I do want to ask you a question, because when we're talking about the current state of the Titans, and, you know, things are not exactly going great right now, your name comes up quite a bit of people will suggest, should Jeff Fisher be an advisor? Should Amy Adams Strunk bring Jeff Fisher in to fix the Titans, to run the team? So I think I know the answer, but I am going to ask you, if that phone call ever came or has come, is that something at this point in your career you would be interested in?
Well, I would never rule out anything. I'm enjoying what I'm doing right now, and that includes some things I haven't been able to do over the last 20 or 30 years, the grandkids especially enjoying Nashville and the people that I, you know, I interact with every day. But if they want some help, you know, they got my number. But I believe that, you know, they've got a good group put together now. These are tough times, especially as you're staring, the prospects of a new stadium and the future, right between the eyes. But I'm open to anything. People have a tendency to, you know, they chase their memories back to the good old days when, you know, hey, when things were good and you're competing every year, you're competitive and you're rebuilding teams and, you know, you're staying up there. And we did that for a long time. And I think there's good things ahead. I just hope that this group, I don't want to call it administration, but that they're given time because, you know, it seems like, and you guys can talk about this, I'm sure you talk about it all the time. I mean, somebody lose four or five games in a row, head coach is gone. I mean, the Bears fire an offensive coordinator. And what did he do? He overnight, he forgot how to call plays. You know, you got to look at everything. And, you know, I mean, I would submit that maybe it's a little too soon for Caleb Williams to be playing right now. You know, maybe he needs some time. So you throw a young quarterback in the fire like that, and obviously he played well enough against the Titans. That was a disappointing loss. But, you know, things have shut down a little bit. But it always falls on a play caller. And I just wish people would have a little bit more patience. Continuity is so important. And whether you're a team in the 70s, 80s, 90s, whenever, it's no different. You need to be patient and give people opportunities and, you know, tell the fan base the truth. But they got my number.
Oh, okay.
I love it.
There you go. Jeff, real quick, could you have gotten away in today's football climate with sitting Steve McNair on the bench for 2 years?
I sat Jared Goff almost the whole season. And I was referred to as the one that almost destroyed Jared Goff. Well, we freaking drafted Jared Goff and brought him along slow. Jared had never called a play on the field. It was all sent in for cards and never ID'd a mic, but I knew Jared was going to be really good. And some meathead out there accused me of almost destroying his career, and I waited. And so we waited a year. I mean, I didn't give it to Steve. I mean, it was, you guys remember him, people weekly, daily would say, when are you going to be ready? And he said, when the coaches say, I'm ready. And so we got Steve quality experience in the rookie year under Chris Chandler, either if we were ahead or behind or there an injury. But, you know, he basically sat the whole year. And then it was time. I mean, it was time to, you know, turn it over to him in 98. And so, I mean, you know, how'd he do? You know? So, yeah. I mean, he gets it done in 98. In 99, in my mind, he was one of the best two or three football players in the National Football League. He might not have been the best quarterback, but he certainly was. And then it was a few years later when he became co-MVP with Peyton. So, it takes time. I don't care, you know. And now you can say, well, what's going on in Washington? Well, I think that's the perfect storm. That's the perfect combination of football IQ on behalf of the quarterback. And then you've got this amazing relationship between Cliff Kingsbury and this kid. And here they are. We're going to get them to what we get to watch them tonight. You know, the stuff that they've done. And so, I mean, everybody's different, but by and large, coaches need to be patient. I mean, you got a quarterback coming in here leading the Minnesota Vikings this weekend. I mean, he was all but done in with the Jets. That was a hard – I mean, they played him too soon. They basically – you guys know what – and we probably talked about this. Greg Williams had a big hand in crippling and –
and the ghost that Sam Darnold was seeing on on Sundays in the games because what Greg was throwing at him in practice. You know, and you just you know, you got to bring guys along at their own You know, you should know when you select them, and you should have a plan. And if you go against the plan, you go contrary to what your the way you had things projected, and that's largely a result of pressure from a fan base. Then you deserve to be you deserve to have a hard time. I mean, you got to stick with it and help them, you don't mold them, you help them unfold. It's like raising your kids. You know, you got to help them unfold. There's so much going on. And, that's why I'm a huge Will Levis fan. And I know he's going to get it done. You know, it's just things need to slow down a little bit for him, and he needs to have a little bit of fun while he's out there.
I know we've gone long here, but I've always wanted to ask you this question. Do you ever look back and think, and I know you had Kerry Collins, but if things had gone the way that I think you guys had wanted them to, and Steve had stayed here and Vince had backed him up for at least a year, do you think Vince's career would have turned out differently?
I believe that, yes, I do, because there was a relationship between Vince and Steve, and it went way back. I mean, it's one of those relationships where they met at one of Steve's football camps, and Vince was a camper.
Yeah.
And he absolutely, their relationship was really good, as a matter of fact. I mean, after Steve left and went to Baltimore, there were several occasions where I called Steve and go, dude, I need some help with Vince. So can you get this across to him? You know, that kind of thing. And he called Vince called Steve Pops. And so there was a relationship there. So to answer your question, had Vince had an opportunity to be Steve's understudy and learn and watch him and prepare and do those things, I think things could have been different. But, Vince was extremely talented, gifted athlete. We all remember that national championship game, when they beat the Trojans. And I remember when that game was over thinking, oh, my gosh, if I could just get a couple of these players. And then we went ahead and then we got a Bo Smith. We got Bo Scaife and Lindell White and our fullback and Vince. I mean, we had some of the best players off that game. And it just really never settled down for Vince. It was like he was chasing something, or there was always some type of distraction in his life that kept him from fulfilling, I think, his potential. But he made me a better coach along the way, because of, I had to understand and learn and get creative and compensate and all that. But yeah, to answer your question, I think it would have been a different deal. Now, Kerry was awesome. You remember, we got rolling and we were 10-0 with Kerry. And you got an undefeated team out there right now that's like, are they going to go? And we all know who they are. Are they going to? And everybody's talking about, okay, can they do it? Well, we had that. We had those discussions. We faced those discussions, at 10-0 after we left Chicago, I think. And, fortunately for us, we got Brett Favre and the Jets come in, and that took care of that 10-0 thing really quick. And we put it behind us and we went on. But, Kerry did a great job for us.
For sure. Jeff, this has been a lot of fun. I know we covered a lot of ground here, but thanks so much for doing this. It's always good to catch up with you, and we'll do it again soon.
Well, put it on your your calendar, man. Call me back. Love to share with you guys. Appreciate the opportunity.
We will.
Okay.
Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, guys.
Jeff Fisher.
Appreciate you.
Uh-huh. Coach Jeff Fisher joining us here on the program. Wow. That was awesome. They have his number.
Yeah.
They have his. Hey, there. You guys have asked. We asked the question. That was the answer.
I took that as a call me.
Call me. Yep. We will react to that and much more. 615-737-1025. Chase and Big Joe, 1025, 1063 The Game.